Session number 16729, Mr. Bill Ridley, Reel 3.
Mr. Ridley, Reel 3. You were talking about the Navy and the fact that you weren't going to get in because you had a tooth missing.
Yes, well, they give us the choice. They said there was one way that I could do it, to join the Navy. I could get all my teeth removed and get false teeth put in. And I declined the invitation. We went from there and we went down to the RAF. And unfortunately, they wouldn't have us. And then it came out that this conscription, that if you joined the Territorial Army, you would avoid being taken up as conscription. Now, we wanted to go into the Army, so we hung back. There was a time limit that you could set, so that if you joined before this time limit, you didn't get called up. So we waited till the time limit was up, and then we joined the Territorial Army. So regardless of being in the Territorial Army, we would get called up. We would definitely get called up in the militia, and this is what we planned to do. And as it happened, the war broke out before we got our calling up paper. So we were already in the Army when we got our calling up paper. But the lad that didn't want to go in the Army was called up in the militia, and he was in before any of us. So Tommy was in, and he ended up in the first ambulance brigade, I think it was. He was in.
How did your parents feel about you joining the Army?
The thought was a little bit mad, but the point was, we were so, you see, we'd done a lot of cycling and we were extremely fit, like, you know, I mean, for civvy street, like, you know, I mean, we loved to get away on the bike, we loved to go in strange places and whatever, and we were tired of being tied up for 12 hours and 13 and 14 hours a day for pittance of a pay, like, you know. And we wanted to join the Army. We wanted some outlet for our energy and that sort of thing. And we thought that the Army was would do great, like, you know. And this is, as it turned out, we were in the army before we got called up, like, you know.
So what date did you join?
No, I can't tell you exactly, but I think it was about either May or June of 1939, about that time. It was unbelievable, honest to God. I mean, we had nothing. We had a denim jacket and a denim pair of pants, rust coloured. And on that jacket was a button. I used to call it Alf's button. Used to be the, I thought it was the magic button that Alf used to rub, and the genie used to write. Now, all the buttons down the front of this rust-coloured denim jacket sort of thing were all bright DLI buttons, you see, except for one. And it was pink. And doesn't matter how much I polished that button, it remained pink. And you believe me, I was on more disciplinary inspections through that pink button than anything all the time I was in the Army. And that button got me into more trouble than enough. But I couldn't do anything with it. But we had nothing, you see.
You'd have a medical before you went in, did you?
Well, do you want to hear about the medical,
yes,
do you?
What kind of medical did they give you?
Well, I'll tell you. You'll not believe this when I tell you. The medical officer used to live in the Crescent in Gateshead. Dr. Scott, I think they call him. I think he was about 102 or something like that. He was at least in his 80s anyway. And Bob and me went together. And as I say, Bob, I remember when Bob only had one eye. And we went in, and at this particular time, tuberculosis and everything was, you know, in the back of the mind, like, you know, oh, I hope I haven't got consumption, oh, I hope I haven't got this, and what kind of say, you know, I said, oh, it'll be all right. Anyway, we went in together, and we stood in front of the desk, and he sat in his chair, and he asked my name, and how old we were. And he said to me, he says, have you had any serious illness? I says, no, sir. He says, have you had chicken pox? I says, not to my knowledge. Have you had measles? I says, oh, I think I've had measles, yes. Can you see that calendar on the wall? I was standing about, mummy's out 10 yards away from it. I says, no, sir. Can you read it? I says, no, sir. He says, take a step forward. He says, can you read it now? I says, no, sir. He says, will you take another step forward? He says, can you read it now? I says, no, sir. At the finish, I was standing reading the calendar like that.
Close to it.
And he says, right, oh, he says, that'll do, you're in. And he signed in. And that was my medical. That was the medical.
You would go home then, and then how did they call you up? How was the actual calling?
Well, the calling up was that was a screaming all lot, and I was in the shop, and on Coatsworth Road, which is not far off the drill, all right, you know, and we knew what was. I mean, by this time we knew there was trouble going to happen, like, you know, and. They were coming in, I was serving in the shop, and they were coming in and saying, oh, the Joe Bloggs from such and such a street, just being called up, and I've got a report to the drill hall as soon as is possible. And another lady used to come in and was, oh, yes, I'm Jack Jones along there, he's been called up. They're calling all the Durhams up, and I'm standing in the shop. I said, they forgot about me. And anyway, the phone rang about 4 o'clock, and my dad on the phone. He says, "You better get around here." He says, "You've been called up." Oh, I says, "Right." Oh, so I goes to the boss, like Mr. Teard. And he was an old man. He was about 72. This on the particular time, and you know, proper old Yorkshireman, you know, strict as. And I could tell you a few tales about him and all. And I says, Mr. Tate, I says, I've been called up. I says, I'll have to go. He says, you'll go when I tell you. I says, but I says, I've got it. He says, you'll stay here till I finish that tease. Well, I says, right, though. So anyway, the girls were having that tease late, and they went and had that tease and come down. And the next went up and had that tease. And it finished the time for me to go to my tea, like, you know. So I said, Mr. Taylor, says, look, I says, I'll have to go. I says, I've been called up. He says, look, he says, before you go, and he says, I want 3 bags of sugar carried downstairs. Now, 3 200-weight bags of sugar. I had to lift them onto my back and carry them down the stairs. Now, the stairs was an ordinary house stairs, where the well comes down like that, you know, and to get under that well, I had to get on my knees with 200-weight bag, dead, you know, dead weight on the sugar, carry it down the stairs and dump it. I had to carry 3 of them down. She's, now you can go out and get enrolled. And that was how I was called up, you know.
And you said this was about the May time,
No, no, this was when the war broke out. This was 3 days before the war. This was the Friday, I think, before the balloon went up.
You hadn't been into the drill hall for any training prior to this?
We used to do never saw a rifle, and in fact I had to get an old soldier that lived in the street for assemble my gears. The old soldier after the First World War, they handed us gears in bits and pieces. I had no clue how to put them together, you know. And
so had you joined the 9th Battalion earlier than this period?
This was the 9th Battalion, yeah, the Territorial.
And you joined those in the May as a Territorial?
Yeah.
So can we go back to that period of time and talk about your introduction to that?
Well, we'd done was maybe marches, recruiting marches around the town with a band and that, right, you know. No, I can't remember doing any, I can't remember seeing a rifle.
You just had these denims, you didn't have the khaki?
No, I didn't have khaki, nothing at all.
And this was the 9th Battalion Durham Light Infantry. Where was the drill hall?
At headquarters at Burt Terrace, it was the headquarters, you know.
Had you had the opportunity to meet any of the officers and NCOs at this time?
I can't remember having anything really to do with anybody other than the lads. I mean, most of the time, I think they just hadn't time for us. We were enrolled, and we actually formed the 2nd 9th Battalion. There were so many blokes enrolled. By the time the war broke out, we had formed another battalion. 2nd 9th, which eventually became the 10th State Scottish. Now, going back to that, I've mentioned Jimmy Kennedy. He was also one of the lads that was a grocer, like, you know. And about 2 or 3 weeks after we got called up, about a fortnight before we got called up, Jimmy was wanting to go to a dance, and he was a bacon man, the same as me, but he worked in Lowfell shop, and he wanted to go to the dance. Well, the dance finished about 12 o'clock, 12:30, and he was still in the shop at 10:30, 10:45, right? And he was wanting to get the last hour in the dance. He must have had a date or something, I'm not sure, right? But he started cleaning the baking machine, right? And we had a habit of, you weren't supposed to do it, but you set your wheels away, and the blade used to belt round, like, you know. And then you used to get the spatula and take the fat off the bacon blade, like, you know, off the blade, on both sides of the blade, and normally you're supposed to just do it with your hand, like, and take the spatula, and take the fat off, and then you used to get the oily cloth and rub the blade from the inside to out, like, you know, because you can't cut yourself that way, but you can cut yourself that way, like, you know. And Jimmy was banging away at this, and he was belted it wrong, you know, and he was putting it in, wanted to get to the dance, and it slipped off the block. The machine slipped off the block, and he put his hands up like that, and he cut his from his index finger to the base of his little finger. He actually lost the tip of that finger, and of course he was in sling, like, you know. I can't remember if they had plasters in them days. But he lost the top of his finger, and he was sliced right down his left hand. And of course he got backdated, and we lost him. He went into the Tyneside Scottish, and he was taken prisoner, because when they landed in France, they had less than us, and we had nothing. And he got taken prisoner, and he was prisoner about 6 years.
In this period, prior to the actual joining up point is on the Fridays, you said. Did you go to the drill hall once a week?
I can't remember ever being. We used to go there, and it was mostly for, as I say, it was mostly we're going there. Oh, yeah. Parading round the town, like recruiting marches, like, you know, and all the girls used to be hanging out the window, and we used to think this was great, like, you know, because we had a fantastic band in them days, you know, really. I mean, the bands you see nowadays was, if you see the light infantry band now, our bugle section was bigger than that band, you know. We had a massive band, we had a beautiful, marvellous band, and in fact, even now, I've got tapes in there with the bugles on. Even now, when I hear the bugles, my hair stands on end, like, you know. And but we had. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I can't remember any time having a rifle or anything like that in my hand.
There hadn't been any drilling with you in the drill hall?
I could be wrong, but I can't remember. In fact, I don't remember getting a rifle until I was called up. And I reported to the drill hall, and they bung me a stack of belts and pouches and whatever. Took them home, and I had to come back and you know, with them on, and I couldn't put them together. I'd never put the years together, and we had an ex Northern soldier of the First World War, and he put them together for us, and I had never put putties on, you know.
You had putties in those days.
Oh yeah, in the beginning, you know, when we did eventually get our uniform. Now, I can't remember how long we waited for that. Like, I mean, I just can't remember. But we had buttons, you know, the old-fashioned service dress, like, you know, and the cheese cutter hat, and the putties which I had to put on, you know, so many folds, and finish it on the outside, like, sort of thing, and. As I say, I just couldn't put them together, and that state of I wouldn't say neglect, lack of training, lack of gear was what we carried into France. You know, I mean, the only good thing we had was what a fantastic band, you know. Well, when we marched away, and we were stationed in the schools at Alexander Road.
So can we just go back to the Friday that you joined?
Yeah.
You went over to the drill hall, and then you were given this equipment.
Is that the
course of events? And you came back home, you said?
You came back home. I got the gear set up and what have you. And
then what happened after that?
Well, you just went and reported, and they shoved you into a school. You know, Alexander Road School, I think it was.
Which road school?
Alexander Road.
And were you sleeping on the floor there?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, hell, I slept. I can't remember having a bed in there. We never had a bed.
Did you have paliasa?
You had paliasa. You had paliasas on the and two blankets.
Had you been put into a company then?
No. You were in a company when you joined. You would get put into a section. Like the Pioneer Platoon or the Signals Platoon or something like that, you know. Well, we ended up in the intelligence section, so it just shows you how badly they were off for talent. But there was six of us. There was Bob, myself, and Big Geordie Richley, who eventually went on to be a captain and won the MC at the Green Awards. Another lad we used to call the Duke, he was a bit posh, you know, Lordy Daw, didn't steer with, disappeared. A lad called Dickie Falkus, he was straight up and down that in Netty Door. He was more fat on the chip than what it was on. In fact, Andy Davison, who eventually was a sergeant, and they got the bounty. And when they got the bounty, you know, it went. And they used to come in paralytic every night, like, you know. And one night, Dickie was always drunk. He was always drunk. And they used to have to carry him in. But they never used to put him to bed. And bed in commas, you know. And Bob Redshaw and me, we didn't drink. And we used to go and sort them out and find out where they were, like you see. But Andy and Big Geordie used to always find his bed. Andy used to always find his bed, but he'd not necessarily get into it, but he always found it. But Dickie Falkus, God knows where he used to get to. But anyway, there was one night we were lost him, like, you know, he wasn't there. And I says to Bob, I said, well, we'll have to find him. God knows where he's got there, like, because, you know, they'd come round and check. And so we went to this Alexander Road School, right? This particular night was, and there was like steps down into the from the classroom into the schoolyard, right? And there was like a railings, and we found them draped over the railings, just like a mat over the railings, absolutely completely out of it, like, you know. And and then another night they come in. Of course, they had that £10 bounty they used to get. They had that bounty, you see. And of course, I mean, it's not like now. I mean, beer was only about sixpence or something a pint, like, you know. And we lost them. We couldn't find them anywhere. We searched high and low for them. We didn't know where he was. We walk out the signal section up, and I seen Dick. I says, have you seen Dick Falkus? No, you know, near as bad as what he was, like, you know. And so anyway, we found him eventually, and you'll never guess where he was. I went to Big Geordie, like, because Geordie was about 6'2", like, massive lad, he was. Big chollers, and he says, I brought him in, he says, I carried him in, he says, he's in here somewhere. And what had happened was he had shrugged him off his shoulder when he was carrying him. And you know the pipes round this classroom door, he'd slid behind the pipes, and he was behind the pipes, and dead beyond the world, and he was doing behind the pipes in the classroom.
Were a lot of men heavy drinkers in the battalion?
Oh yeah, this is like the pop, like, you know, and it's all right. Yeah, they used to like the beer. In fact, I think they built a monument. One of the breweries built the monument to the Devons when they got the bounty, like, you know. And we weren't there that long after that. We weren't.
So you joined up, in a sense, on the Friday, then gone into these schools.
Yeah, in the school.
What were they doing with you in the schools? What was happening?
Nothing. It was just. It was everything was. Everything was just. Everything was in a tiz was, you know. We went to church on the Sunday morning.
In church when the actual declaration was?
No, it was outside. We came back.
What was the situation at the time of the announcement? What were you doing?
I think you didn't do much on a Sunday night, you know. But we came back from the. We came back. I remember I was in the drill hall actually at the time, and. What had happened, we used to go down, the band used to take us down to the to St Mary's Church, you know, and they used to have a service there, and they come, and then they used to march you back from there, and then they used to take you onto what used to be the rugby field next to the drill hall, and they used to dismiss you. And I came into there, and I was in the drill hall, and I saw one of the officers come round, and they gone, it's on! You know, with a thumbs up, like, you know, it's on, you know.
What was your own personal reaction?
I don't know. It wasn't. I didn't have any. feeling at all about it, you know. Of course, you must understand we were very naive, like, you know. I mean, we didn't know what it was all about, you know. I didn't anyway, you know. And
was there any feeling that it would be over by Christmas? You'd beat them easy.
This is one of the most fantastic things that I've ever known. Even at what deepest place. The depth that we got to, we never thought we'd get beat. No. We never thought we'd get beat. Never crossed our mind. And we're down and out when we came back from France. I mean, we're sharing one rifle between two at one time. I mean, we're down and out, but we never thought we'd get beat. Strange.
So the declaration of war was on the Sunday the 3rd. What happened to you then? You were still in these schools.
Well, to put it bluntly, to me, it's a vague, vague situation. Like, you know, and we're just more or less buggering around. And eventually, what happened was, I mean, we were probably learning how to put our gears together and how to put putties on and things like that. Like, you know, and it was about. I think we were only there about a fortnight or something. Then the march were from there to after about a fortnight or 3 weeks, they marched us down to Whitburn, and we marched with the full band. And the band played every step of the way, the bugles blew and everything. And we thought we were the greatest. It was magic. It was really magic. And for the first time, we went down there, and we had been allocated to being the intelligence section, like, you know. And we had a sergeant in charge of the First World War. And he was telling me what job was be to go and spotting for snipers and leading the clearing minefields and this sort of thing, like, you know, like laying the tapes out for the attacks and all this.
Yeah, we'll talk about the intelligence section. Had you been given any more equipment,
we eventually got in that period of time we got our uniform and issued with a rifle and that sort of thing, like 72 or 2, I think the main was the number, and that's more or less what they were doing, re-equipping. You know, equipping them with what they had, like, you know. As I say, we were just in the denims for quite a while before we got our uniform, like, you know.
The intelligence section, how is it made up?
Well, there's an officer and a sergeant, and there's about six men. And the job was that you had a number of jobs, and spotting for snipers was one. The other one used to, you go out and used to...
Can I ask you about spotting for snipers? How did you spot for them?
Well, they used to go out in pairs, you know, and the sniper was a crack shot, like, you know, and you used to go out and used to sus, and you had the glasses, like, you know, and used to look for the... anybody that they thought was used to lay the sniper on for the you know, if there was a bloke showing himself, like, you know.
So your job, or one of the two, would be to look at the an enemy position and indicate a target for the sniper who was with you.
Yeah. This was the theory. I mean, it very rarely happened. I think it only happened about once with me, like, you know. Because we'll come to that when we when we when when uh,